Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
We get back to the Vulcan planet, and we're confronted by this procession that comes out to meet us, and a very important matriarchal character being carried in a sedan chair, and I'm to greet her, and she's to welcome me back to Vulcan. I haven't been there in quite a while, and we're supposed to say hello to each other. And I suggested to the director that there should be some Vulcan thing that Vulcans do when they greet, like humans shake hands, or military people salute each other, Asian people bow to each other. We have rituals. What's the Vulcan ritual on a greeting? And I said, well, how about that? I said, okay. So I did that, and she did that, and next thing I knew, it was in the scripts. Spock with the Vulcan salute.
Good morning, it's Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. It's that time of year where we talk about the list of the best and worst of everything in 2015. But it's also a time that we remember and reflect on those familiar faces we lost over the past year. Some are very familiar, some you might not know, but wish you had. And joining me live in studio, and we've been doing this for the last 4 years on 720 WGN, we welcome pop culture historians Wally Podrazik and Kevin Picorni. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning to
you. Good morning, Dave. Good morning to you. There, that we started off with a little bit of Leonard Nimoy explaining what the Vulcan salute was on Star Trek. There's so many to talk about, and some we're going to go over and provide some more detailed background. Others we're going to just tell a little bit about. We're going to categorize them by television, the movies, music, and sports, and those who otherwise impacted our lives. Let's start with television and Leonard Nimoy.
Well, Leonard Nimoy in particular is someone who could have been considered typecast with the role of Spock, but instead he used it, he embraced it at the same time that he put it in context. He turned what could have been a simple, oh, he was that pointy-eared space alien in that one short-lived three-season science fiction series. And instead, that became his jumping-off point to do so much more. And yet, he always respected the character.
Which is rare.
Very rare. Yeah. And even when he was, quote, distancing himself, like he had a book called I Am Not Spock, okay, you've just reminded everybody about Spock.
Yeah.
And it was very conscious when he did that. And so basically, he used his affectionate association with the viewers and with industry people for Spock to open doors. Spock, though, may have opened the doors, but Leonard Nimoy came in and delivered the goods. He came in and became a director. He did many acting roles, which were not Spock, but drew on your awareness
influenced
of Spock.
By, yeah, exactly.
In other words, he played Sherlock Holmes, very logical, of course. He played in the remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He was the one who could pull off the, is he or isn't he an alien? Because, well, you knew he was an alien from his other work. Even further, though, he was a fan of the character and made sure the character was always treated right. So when the Star Trek series was rebooted as a feature film, he definitely was given a wonderful role by J.J. Abrams, in fact, of himself.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Instead of saying we are replacing Spock, instead it was we now have two Spocks with Zachary Quinto succeeding him in the same character, but in a parallel world. And I think one of the best and most playful tributes to the respect that Nimoy earned was on 2013. He and Quinto were in an Audi auto commercial, in which they were kind
that.
Of competing
yeah.
with each other to get to a golf outing.
But again, as you said, always playful with the character.
Always playful, yeah. always yeah. respectful. Packed with allusions to his entire career and ending up with the crossing of real life and fiction by having Nimoy deliver the Vulcan pinch, which would put Quinto flat on his back.
Used to try that on my brother all the time.
I bet you did. And Mira of Stiller and Mira.
You know, it's one of the...
Ben Stiller's mom.
Ben Stiller's mother, yes. And I'll tell you what, it was... You go through... doing your research on her, so many questions about when did they divorce? They never divorced. They were married for 60 years, the two of them. They met at an audition in New York City, the two of them together.
Staple on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then she had a recurring role on Rhoda. She was the bartender on Archie Bunker's Place.
She was, yeah.
She got,
yeah.
It was two Emmy nominations for that. And, of course, Dave, you'll remember her on Elf.
Oh, the Elf?
She was, Elf? What she did. Sex and the City, of course, with her husband, Art Spooner, on King of Queens. But what I remember, and you might remember this too, is the Blue Nun commercials. The radio commercials for Blue Nun. They were hilarious. You know, nobody
That's
was doing
right.
the shtick, and they were so it was almost like a reality radio commercial. This was
that.
Like in the 70s when Blue Nun started that campaign. They were selling somewhere around 90,000 cases a year. At the end of Stiller and Mira doing those commercials, they were selling 800,000 cases.
Power of their comedy.
Yeah.
Power of their comedy. Somebody I had a crush on in the 60s and 70s, Yvonne Craig, who played Batgirl.
And you could think
which
of
is really sad because I don't want to think that Batgirl's gone already.
you can think of her as the first female TV superhero.
Yeah.
She was brought in the third season of the Batman series to boost ratings, basically. But she was also brought in, she thought, because she was a dancer. And because of the stylized nature of the filming of Batman, there were going to be a lot of these pirouettes as part of the fight scenes, smash, pow, crash, bang. But it's sort of ironic that in the same year that she passed, someone who was behind what upstaged everybody else on the TV series, and that was George Barris, who designed, created the Batmobile.
Yeah, he's been at Volvo Auto Museum quite a bit, actually, doing appearances and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's so cool to see that. When my kids even see that car at their age, that is just, it's so iconic. And the Beverly Hillbillies car as well, which brings me to Donna Douglas, who played Ellie Mae, who passed away also.
She's probably our first celebrity to die this last year. She was January 1st. It's hard to imagine Ellie Mae Clampett being 81 years old.
Yeah, I know.
How about
true.
This? Irene Ryan, who played Granny at the time of her death, she was only 70.
Yeah,
they olded
her up for the role.
She was Miss Baton Rouge. She was Miss New Orleans. She starred opposite Elvis Presley, Frankie and Johnny. Here's the one that always impresses me. If you remember the Twilight Zone episode, it was The Eye of the Beholder, where she was wrapped in bandages and she was living in this land of people who had distorted faces.
Yeah.
That was Donna Douglas at the end of that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to talk more about those who we lost in 2015. And this hour has been sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks.
It's a bold one you are. And who gave you leave to be kissing me?
So you can talk.
Yes, I can. I will and I do. And it's more than talk you'll be getting if you step a step closer to me.
Don't worry, you got a wallop.
You'll get over it, I'm thinking.
Well, some things a man doesn't get over so easy.
Like what, supposing?
Like the sight of a girl coming through the fields with the sun on her hair, kneeling in church with a face like a saint.
Saint indeed.
And now coming to a man's house to clean it for him.
But that was just by way of being a good Christian act.
I know it was, Mary Kay Denner. And it was nicer.
That was Maureen O'Hara from The Quiet Man and Miracle on 34th Street. We'll be talking about movies in just a little bit. It's Dave Player in for Steve on 720 WGN. And we're talking to pop culture historians Wally Podrazik and Kevin Pokorny about those we lost in 2015. We were just wrapping up television. Gary Owens and Judy Carne, all from Laugh-In.
All from Laugh-In. Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Judy Carne, remember as the Sock It To Me.
Yep.
Girl.
Yep.
You and I were just talking during break that she was married to Burt Reynolds, and that was all of 2 years. Almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of 2 years.
Yeah.
Gary Owen, we probably remember him best from Sesame Street. If you remember, he was always introducing letters and numbers.
Oh yeah.
That was his gig.
Yeah.
That was fun stuff. But actually, knowing your level of interest, you'll remember him as the Blue Falcon. Remember the Blue Falcon and Dino Mutt on Saturday morning cartoons? That was the voice
the
of Gary Owens. Yeah, man, that was him. He also has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. You'll find him between Walt Disney and your pal Betty White.
Oh, there you go. Patrick McNee from the Avengers.
And I'm going to be able to tie that into Judy Carne as well. Patrick McNee.
Did they date?
Was the dapper John Steed in the Avengers throughout its entire run, 1961 through 69, came back to reprise the role in something called The New Avengers. And in all of these, he was the dapper, in control, quintessential embodiment of British class. And he brought that to just about any role, even when he was supposedly the second to James Bond in A View to a Kill. He had more class than Roger Moore. I respect Roger Moore, but John Steed, a.k.a. Patrick McNee, controlled whatever scene he was in. Now, I saw him in person, live on stage at the Schubert Theater in the mid-70s in an Alan Ayckbourn show called Absurd Person Singular. Patrick McNee was one of the six leads, and Judy Carne was another.
Oh, very good. Huh. Very good. There's your tie.
Good tie.
Nicely done. Others in television that passed that we'll just mention, Dick Van Patten from Eight is Enough, Roger Reese, who was on Cheers and also a long career on Broadway, Al Molinaro.
Ugh.
Big Al.
Yeah. Al Delvic. Yeah. I'm sure Rosa Coletti's sad at his passing.
Random.
What was Murray's last name on The Odd Couple? There's my
Murray
trivia.
On The Odd Couple.
Come on. Greshler.
I wouldn't have guessed that in a million years. But that's how we first met, Molinaro. Jack Larson, who played Jimmy Olsen on Superman. I think it's David Canary, who played Adam Chandler on All My Children for decades. Susan Croft, who played Tracy on The Partridge Family, youngest girl.
Tambourine-slapping girl. She got a bachelor's degree. She was working. She owned her own bookstore for a while.
Yeah, she wasn't acting.
No, she got out of it. Yeah.
Martin Milner, Adam 12, James Best, Roscoe P. Coltrane from Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes, and he certainly was part of what made Dukes of Hazzard successful.
But long before that.
Yes, exactly.
He had quite a career as well. Marty Ingalls, I'm Dickens, he's Fenster. He's a voiceover artist as well. Dick Van Dyke Show, he was Saul Pomeroy.
Saul Pomeroy. He was one of Rob's old army buddies. He used to love watching those episodes.
And married to Shirley Jones for years, too. Bud Yorkin.
Bud Yorkin, this is coming month in January, is the anniversary of when All in the Family started. And Bud Yorkin was there right beside Norman Lear in terms of bringing that concept, which is a British concept, to
the U.S. I remember seeing
the
name
US.
Always in the beginning of that show.
Exactly.
Bud Yorkin. On to the movies. A little bit, we bumped in with Maureen O'Hara from The Quiet Man. I probably know her a little more familiar from watching Miracle on 34th Street just a couple of weeks ago. But around a long time,
in
the movies.
Born actually in Dublin, Ireland. Get back to that when we talk about Quiet Man. But she did, gee whiz, The Parent Trap, Miracle on 34th Street, Hunchback in Notre Dame, How Green Was My Valley. But for me, I don't know about you, but I know her from the John Wayne movies. She was in Rio Grande, McClintock, Big Jake.
It was more than just The Quiet Man.
Right. Yeah. But The Quiet Man, boy, that was something. You know, she was surrounded by her family at her death, and their story is that she was listening to the music from The Quiet Man as she passed. That was her favorite. She just...
Do you have a story about Maureen O'Hara and what John Wayne and her said to one another?
Oh,
you were telling me from...
At the end of The Quiet Man, there's a scene where the two of them are sitting out in front of that little cottage in Innisfree. And she leans over and she whispers something into his ear, into Duke's ear. And he turns to her, and there's this look of shock and surprise in his face. And John Ford would do this. He would talk to his actors, actresses about, I want you to say this to him, because he wanted that natural look of shock and surprise. Whatever she said to him, now the story is that she said to John Ford, I can never say, whatever it was, I can never say that to Duke. I would never say that to him. But he got her to say it. And to this day, nobody knows what it is that she whispered to him.
That's
she
wild.
Swore everybody to it.
That's awesome.
Never know.
Love to hear that. Robert Loggia, I actually met him a couple years ago. I mean, Scarface, Big, he played on the piano with Tom Hanks. I knew him from The Sopranos.
Exactly. And that was perfect casting in that he had the credibility to play the character of Feech LaManna. Now,
yes.
The trick here is that he was old school. He was the old timer who was trying to get back in after prison, trying to get back into operations. And it was really appropriate casting in that you had the young guy, James Gandolfini, as the godfather-like character of The Sopranos. And he has tremendous respect for the old-timer, but he's got to keep him in his place.
Yeah, right.
And so there's this back-and-forth tension, and Loggia pulls it off perfectly. And eventually, instead of being whacked, instead of he...
Which is the respect he had for the older crew.
He had the... instead, they figure out a way to frame him so that he goes back to prison.
Yeah.
And so it is essentially, we respect what you did. I'm not going to disrespect you, but we can't really have you here anymore.
But
you
see you
bring
later.
Too much with you.
Exactly.
People respect you, and that's a challenge to me, says Tony.
Dickie Moore and Gene Darling. These are not as familiar names, right. But Kevin, tell us a little bit about them.
Both, as we would call them, little rascals, but as Hal Roach would call them.
And those we lost in 2015 is what we're talking about. Our gang comedy.
Lost too, Our gang. Hal Roach brought Dickie Moore in. This was early 30s. He was working with Spanky, Stymie, and the whole gang. Here's the cool thing about Dickie Moore is that he stayed in movies for a good portion of his life. He was Shirley Temple's first on-screen kiss.
Wow.
It was Miss Annie Rooney was the name of it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Gene Darling, who was another one of the rascals. She was, my goodness, she's still a holdout from the silent.
The early
ones, yeah.
The 20s,
There were 46 silent Little Rascals, Our Gang, that Hal Roach did, and she was a part of that. So she did nearly 50 of those, and some of the talkies too, some of the very first talkies for Our Gang.
Very cool, very cool. Wes Craven, icon in horror, the horror genre,
a maestro. If he did nothing else but Freddy Krueger, he was responsible for embedding his vision into the nightmares of people for generations. But he also did sort of the flip side, the Scream series, which basically made fun of what he himself had begun as his career. He started with something called A Last House on the Left, which he wrote and directed back in 1972, followed with The Hills Have Eyes. And basically, he owned that style of horror, of what we consider fairly modern horror approach. I mean, explicit, scary, but eventually and ultimately with a little bit of a sense of humor.
Now, we're going to cover music and sports as we look back to those we lost in 2015 next, but other movie those we lost, Omar Sharif, Dr. Zhivago, Robert Taylor from Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, Christopher Lee, Lord of the Rings, Alex Rocco from Godfather, and much more. And again, music and sports we'll look at next on 720 WGN. Stay player in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN, and we're talking to pop culture historians Wally Podrazik and Kevin Pokorny about those we lost in 2015. That, of course, is B.B. King.
B.B. King. You mean Riley?
Yes.
Riley B. King. It was started out as a disc jockey in Memphis, Tennessee, and he was dubbed, here it is, the Beale Street Blues Boy. And Blues Boy became B.B., and that's how he got his nickname. This is something, Dave. His 15th Grammy Award, and you're going to say, oh, he probably won 15th, probably somewhere in the 1980s or so, maybe. No. He won his 15th Grammy Award in 2009.
That's pretty cool.
2009.
Yeah.
Later in life, many collaborations, he worked with Eric Clapton, Elton John, Sheryl Crow, Van Morrison, Bonnie Raitt. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, played at the White House for Barack Obama with his buddy Guy. And they performed together, Sweet Home Chicago. They brought the president up on stage for that.
Very cool. Very cool. Ben E. King.
And actually, just to add to that list of supporters, Ringo Starr stopped by when B.B. King did his album, B.B. King in London. And of course, come to my country, I'll stop by and play drums for you anytime.
How cool is that? How cool is that?
Ben E. King. Just say that name and then just say Stand By Me, and you've got one of the quintessential defining songs of soul. He came from the Drifters, and he sang lead on a succession of songs, Save the Last Dance for Me, This Magic Moment, I Count the Tears, and then on his own, after leaving the Drifters, he had Stand By Me, Spanish Harlem, There Goes My Baby, and this actually relates back. This is my semi-obligatory Beatles connection, because one of John Lennon's last solo single releases before he went into retirement was his cover version of Stand By Me. And his son Julian later did a cover version of that as well. Speaking of things Beatle, a couple of Beatles-related folks, others that we lost this year, John Lennon's first wife, Cynthia.
Right.
Brian Epstein managed Cilla Black, who was a stablemate of the Beatles. They used to compose songs for her. Drummer Andy White, who played on the Love Me Do September 11th, 1963 recording session, to which you say big deal, but actually there were two recordings of Love Me Do, and that was the one that we knew quite well here in the States. And then documentary filmmaker Albert Mazels, who captured their 1964 first U.S. tour visit with a documentary, The Beatles Come to the U.S.
Someone just texted in at 920, please don't forget to mention we also lost my pet hamster this year.
Well, that was nice of him. What was his name?
No, that's the name of the group, My Pet Hamster.
Right.
Leslie Gore, It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want
can.
To.
Yeah, Judy's Turn to Cry, You Don't Own Me, and everybody knows It's My Party. She was actually 17 years old. She was in high school, a junior in high school, and she was signed by Mercury Records. And you might know the guy that signed her. His name is Quincy Jones. And that was the first real hit that Quincy Jones produced was Leslie Gore's It's My Party. Later on, there was an album that went out. It was a tribute album to Quincy Jones, and Amy Winehouse did the remake of It's My Party.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. There was Jerry Weintraub, who managed John Denver, Sinatra, Elvis. There was Percy Sledge, When a Man Loves a Woman, Scott Weiland, who was the Stone Temple's pilot frontman. I think the frontman from Motorhead just passed away. Gary Richrath, who was the REO guitarist. But there was also a recording artist that wasn't necessarily music, and that was Stan Freberg.
Oh, my gosh. Stan Freberg is an industry in and of himself. I mean, anyone who appreciates music, who appreciates humor, and who appreciates the development of pop culture in this century has to love Stan Freberg. Freberg is the one who did parody songs, who was in commercial advertising, so he knew how to write an effective jingle and how to write an effective message. Every Christmas, we hear his parody of Christmas. We hear his St. George and the Dragonet with his parody of Dragnet. He made fun of Lawrence Welk. He made fun of Johnny Ray. Frankly, a person that most people say, Johnny Ray, who's that?
Yeah.
And he did a parody of Johnny Ray's hit Cry, which actually revived interest in Johnny Ray's version of Cry. Because Stan made you think, well, that's pretty funny. I wonder what the original sounds like. Basically, he came from the school of Jack Benny humor. He came from the school of 1940s, 1950s, 1960s radio humor. He saw radio, records, and sound as a palette on which he could do anything, and he did.
Toward the end of his career, he hosted When Radio Was, too, the old-time radio program,
right.
I think, the Nation one, right?
Loved that,
yeah. Yep. All right, we're going to cover sports and notable figures after the news next as we look back at those we lost in 2015 on 720 WGN.
Jarvis fires away. That's a fly ball deep to left. Back. That's it. Hooray! He did it. Ernie Banks got number 500. A line drive shot into the seats and left. The ball tossed to the bullpen. Everybody on your feet. This is it.
Let's go. Batter up. We're
State Player in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. And we're talking to pop culture historians Wally Podrazik and Kevin Pokorny about those we lost in 2015. And, of course, that is all about Mr. Ernie Banks.
Mr. Cub. The bump in was Ernie Banks' 500th home run called by Jack Brickhouse with the Hey Hey. Fantastic bump in there. The only other song that would have made me happier is Hey Hey Holy Mackerel. With him singing it.
Yeah.
Died in January last year, 83 years old. He was an 11-time All-Star. Started playing with the Kansas City Monarchs when he was 17 years old. The coach of the Kansas City Monarchs was the first guy to recognize him, and probably the greatest nickname in all of sports is James Cool Papa Bell. If you would call me from now on, Dave, if you agree with me, cool Papa.
Could do that, yeah.
I would
yeah.
like that. 19 years in the majors, and all of them with the Chicago Cubs. He was the Cubs' very first black player in 1953. Was the first player to win the Most Valuable Player Award from a losing team, which he did, and he was the first one to do it back-to-back. And really, I think the only one, isn't he? The only one to have done it back-to-back. Just a legendary icon. How does someone carry the moniker of the team that he plays for? With such a storied past as the Cubs have had, he's Mr. Cub. And what a loss. A bronze statue in front of Wrigley Field for you for life.
Well, and Andy noted that as one of the big sports stories yeah. of 2013, yeah. along with Minnie Minoso.
Yeah, and Minnie Minoso.
Minnie Minoso, that's right.
Kind of the faces of the franchises.
512 home runs. I think he's still sixth, I believe. I'm sorry, way off. 22nd now on that list. He's tied with Eddie Matthews. And I remember as a kid, Eddie Matthews came to Wrigley Field. I think they were probably in their around 60 years old, he and Eddie, and they wanted to finally put an end to the tie. And Eddie was the only one that put one into the bleachers that day. But forever Mr. Cub, and what a story.
Frank Gifford, National Football.
And for Frank Gifford...
Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. And actually, let me put on my TV writer hat here to emphasize, as a TV historian, that he brought credibility to the ABC Monday Night Football. It's hard for us to imagine back in the day with the idea of having a primetime program devoted to football on a major network. That was a big deal. That was a break from the usual spot where you would find football. And he was the one who was the counter to Howard Cosell or Don Meredith. I mean, he was the even-handed play-by-play right. announcer who could tell you what was really going on. When he was there, he was the rock-solid foundation of that broadcast.
Meadowlark Lemon, Harlem Globetrotters, recent.
Right, very recent. The clown prince of basketball. Is in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame as a contributor. He joined in 2003. Probably in his own right, good enough that he could have played professional basketball himself and been quite a player and could have created some statistics that we'd be talking about today. But he was more interested in the entertainment end of it, and boy, did he ever. He appeared in more than 16,000 games. He joined the Globetrotters when he was 22, traveled to 100 different countries. According to him, he traveled 4 million miles in his career playing basketball. Wilt Chamberlain was quoted as saying, people would say it would be Dr. J or Michael Jordan as one of the greatest players ever. But Wilt Chamberlain said for him it was Meadowlark Lemon. He started his own. He had Meadowlark Lemon All-Stars. He kind of broke away from Globetrotters at one point. But Dave, knowing your highbrow interest in entertainment, you'll remember him best being part of the Harlem Globetrotters meet Scooby-Doo. I know yes, that's...
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, if you don't yeah. mention that, how
oh
can
my
you
God,
possibly
I forgot
have the whole
about
career
that.
Covered?
I forgot
how
about that.
How can you think about this guy without hearing sweet Georgia Brown in the background and this guy whipping the ball all over the place,
that's
bucket
fabulous.
Full of confetti that he'd throw into the audience, just... Great memories from him.
Classic, absolutely. And then there was Yogi Berra, of course, Baseball Hall of Famer, and best quotes on the planet, or the most unusual quotes I should say, on the planet.
Oh, my goodness. It's probably the yogiisms for which he's most famous. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize what a player he was before that. MVP three times. He was part of 10 world championships. He played in 18 All-Star games. But, yeah, when you get down to it, it's going to be, you know, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Yeah.
The yogiisms, it ain't over till it's over. It's like deja vu all over again. You can observe a lot of things just by watching. And he had said one time, I haven't said half the things that I've said.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Tony Verna, who's not as much of a known character, but this was he was the inventor of the instant replay.
Yeah, and you know, for a baseball purist like myself, it's, man, you know, now that replay is used actually in the games to overturn calls. It's just that little piece of that human aspect of the game that's lost now. I'm not trying to belittle a guy who's passed away, God rest his soul, but I could do without instant replay in as far as changing outcomes of games.
But it's also become so integrated into the way we watch it that we expect when we go to, say, a fancy new stadium that we could look up at the scoreboard and see an instant replay of what we just saw in person.
I'm to the point where I'm at watching high school games and I say, well, that's fantastic, and looking somewhere frantically to find, I get to see this again, right? No, you're not going to see it again. We're just used to that. It's part of the culture now.
But part of television history.
Indeed.
Yep. Yep.
Notable figures. We'll go from sports to notable figures. One name you probably don't know, and that's Nicholas Winton.
Yeah, you and I were talking about this, and for me, probably one of the most fascinating deaths of this past year. 106 years old. Everybody knows who Oscar Schindler is, and many people have seen the movie Schindler's List, and he was the British Oscar Schindler, though he really didn't appreciate that that nickname later in life. He rescued 669 children from Prague. He's a stockbroker, and he's living in London, and he has this opportunity this one particular weekend. He's going on a ski weekend, and he gets a call from his friend that this is what's going on in Prague. The Nazis are going to come on the assault, and we need to do something about this. He gets to Prague and starts this Jewish refugee program where they're trying to get the children out. It's almost like a sponsorship program. They're sending out trains. He got 8 trains out of Prague. Unfortunately, the final train, which held about 200 children, never made it out. He was knighted by the Queen in 2003. He received Czech Republic's highest honor just a few years back. And just a neat story.
He didn't talk about it.
He didn't talk
about
it.
Nobody really knew about it until his later age that
his
was the
wife
guy that
came
did that.
Across some books that he had, and it was full of passports and lists of names. And she started asking him about this, and he didn't think it was really worth anything. He actually encouraged her to toss the stuff away. And she said, no, and I want to look into this a little bit more. And it became later on these people reconnecting with him. You know, they referred to himself as Winton's children. You know, there's a great, if you can find it on the internet, this great clip that it's almost like this is your life, but it's the British version of it, where this woman is telling her story about being this Jewish refugee child in Prague. And she tells the story. She gets to the end, and then they announce, turn next to you and meet Nicholas Winton. And the woman has this emotional outburst. Well, then they say, if anybody in the audience considers himself a child of Winton, please stand up. And they had in the audience 50 or 60 people
that's pretty
in the
cool.
audience. It was emotional, very spectacular. What a guy.
Very cool. Very cool stuff. Some other sports, by the way, just texted into, don't forget, Moses Malone, Daryl Dawkins, and also
Chocolate
White
Thunder.
Sox great Billy Pierce.
Yeah.
Who was with the White Sox for quite some time as well. I was called out as a Cubs fan for getting the White Sox players that passed away.
I just got several text messages saying, what about the Sox? But yeah, I think we have our answer.
All right. Fred Thompson, Watergate, senator, actor.
And Fred Thompson is one of the cliches about contemporary society is that Washington is in love with Hollywood. Hollywood is in love with Washington. And Fred Thompson did both. He was a respected senator from Tennessee, and he was also a respected actor in Law and Order. And in his later years, he hosted a conservative radio talk show and became a TV pitchman. And that was probably one of the strangest things is as you're watching, especially some of these nostalgia channels, which would constantly have Fred Thompson as a spokesperson for a particular product, then you hear that he's passed, go, oh, hey, got to pull all these commercials.
Yeah.
But he definitely was a spokesman and an effective one because he was so respected. He had this air of confidence. And in fact, for a while, he had
came
made
across in everything he did.
It came across, and he made a run as to be president, but then didn't get past the
Are you saying all politicians are actors? Is that what you're...
Yes, and all actors are politicians.
That's correct. Okay. A couple locals, Cardinal George, Francis George, who used to do my show quite frequently, passed away earlier this year. And weatherman for WGN, WBBM, Harry Volkman.
And in both in George's case, it was sort of local boy makes good. And
of Chicago.
What was most impressive about George is that he said, I'm going to allow for an orderly transition. I see the end of my life coming, but instead of hanging on here until that happens, and then everything's in suspension until that process plays out, instead he stepped aside and let his successor come in. And that was really a respectful thing to do.
There was Mario Cuomo, Don Featherstone, who was the creator of the Pink Flamingo Lawn Ornament. I mean, just some random there. Jackie Collins, the author. Forrest Byrd, inventor of the ventilator. Paul Prudhomme, who is a chef. Chuck Williams, founder of Williams and Sonoma. Tom Stenberg, Staples founder. Betty Willis, name that nobody knows. She designed the Las Vegas sign that is so visible, obviously, on anything related to Vegas. Bo Biden, son of Vice President Joe Biden. Bird Shavitz from Burt's Bees. Lillian Verman. So many others, and so many we lost in 2015. And we'll post all of this at WGNRadio.com. Really quick, Wally, you're working on the next edition of your book, Watching TV.
Watching TV. It's now 8 decades of American television, and it's going to hit the stands in early 2016.
Very cool. Wally, Kevin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave.
And Happy New Year to you
as well. Happy New Year, Dave.
Absolutely.